Maplewood Barn Radio Theater is next on KBIA, sponsored by D&H Drugstores.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Continuing the tradition of our radio show, we bring you another piece of classic literature, dramatized for audio production. Tonight's classic is based on a short story by Edna Ferber called Knee Deep in Knickers. It stars one of Ferber's most beloved characters, the irrepressible Emma McChesney, secretary of T.A. Buck's Featherloom Petticoat Company. As we join Emma and Buck, they have just left a depressing stockholders meeting where the loss side of the ledger sheets outweighed the profit side. T.A. Buck's hands are thrust deep into his pockets. He is savagely chewing a cigar, and concern is perched on his brow. T.A. turns to Emma and says,
"Well, it hasn't taken us long, has it? Father's been dead a little over a year. In that time, we've just about run this great concern, the pride of his life, into the ground."
"What rotten football material you would have made. Just can't take a hit, can you?"
"Oh, I don't know. I can stand as tough a scrimmage as the next man, but this isn't a game. You take things too lightly. You're a woman. I don't think you know what this means."
"Oh, I think women are tougher than most men generally think. Have you ever given birth?"
No, I don't believe I...
Well, it's no cakewalk, let me tell you. Look, maybe I don't take myself too seriously. I'd have been dead 10 years ago if I had. But I do take my job seriously. Don't forget that for a minute. You talk the way a man always talks when his pride is hurt."
"Pride? It isn't that."
"Oh, yes, it is. I didn't sell T.A. Buck's Featherloom Petticoats on the road for almost 10 years without learning a little something about men and business. When your father died, and I learned that he had shown his appreciation of my work and loyalty by making me secretary of this great company, I didn't think of it as a legacy, a stroke of good fortune."
"No?"
"No. To me, it was a sacred trust, something to be guarded, nurtured, cherished. And now you say we've run this concern into the ground. Do you honestly think that?"
"Well, figures don't lie."
"Some figures do. Have you ever seen a woman wearing a corset?"
"Look, Emma, another year like this and we're done for."
"T.A., wake up. Wake up and listen to the birdies sing. There isn't going to be another year like this. Not if the planning and scheming and brain-racking that I've been doing for the last 2 or 3 months have any effect."
"Got another new idea?"
"Here, just look at this new line of petticoats. Just take a look. Brilliant colors, soft, breathable silk fabrics. Why, 15 years ago, the material in any one of these skirts wouldn't have made a decent sleeve."
"I don't see how they get around in those darn things. I honestly don't see how they wear them."
"That's just it. They don't wear them. There you have the root of the whole trouble."
"Well, what's the answer? I've been pondering petticoat problems. I know we've got to sell 3 skirts today to make the profit that we used to make on one 3 years ago."
"This skirt business reminds me of a game we used to play when I was a kid. Each child sat in a chair except the one who was it. At a signal, everybody had to get up and change chairs. There was a wild scramble, and when the hurly-burly was over, some child was always chairless. He had to be it. That's the skirt business today. There aren't enough chairs to go around. And in the scramble, somebody's going to be left out. And let me tell you here and now that the firm of T.A. Buck Featherloom Petticoats is not going to be it."
"I thought we had tried every possible scheme to stimulate the petticoat trade."
"Every possible one, yes. And now it's time to try the impossible. The possibilities haven't worked. My heavens, I could write a book on the decline and fall of the petticoat, beginning with the billowy white muslin variety and working up to the present slinky messaline affair. When I think of those dear dead days of the glorious past..."
"Yes, I remember your Municipal Purity League agitation for the abolition of the form-hugging skirt. You talked public morals until you made William Jennings Bryan look like a Parisian Apache."
"Yes, but what good did it do? None! For every snapshot showing what happens when a woman climbs into a trolley car, the tailors and dressmakers came back with pictures of styles from 1861, proving that the streetcar effect is nothing to the embarrassment of a Civil War belle if she chanced to sit down or get up too suddenly in a hoop skirt. It wasn't just the snapshots that were overexposed."
"Yep, there you are. But meanwhile, here we are."
"Meanwhile, women are still wearing them tight and going without petticoats."
"Well, I'm out of ideas. Whatever your scheme is, let's hear it. It's our last card, whatever it is."
"Not yet. Just because it's our last card, I want to be sure that I'm playing it well. I'll be ready for you tomorrow morning in my office. Come prepared for the jolt of your life.
Ah, Emma, you are a gem. When you talk like that, I always feel as though I could take on those famous jobs that Hercules tackled and make them look like little Willie's chores after school.
Good. Just hold that thought, will you? And don't let it filter out when I begin to talk tomorrow.
We'll have lunch together, eh? And talk it over sociably?
Nope. There's nothing sociable about it. My office at 9:30.
But why not lunch? You never eat lunch with me. It's so much more comfortable to talk about things over a meal.
When I talk business, I want to be surrounded by a business atmosphere. One practical desk, two practical chairs, one telephone, etc. And when I lunch, I want to lunch, with nothing heavier on my mind than the question as to whether I'll have chicken liver sauté or creamed sweetbreads with mushrooms.
That's no reason. That's just an excuse.
It will have to do.
And with that, Emma left T.A. standing in the doorway, watching her trim, erect figure disappear into the little office across the hall. The next morning, the little clock on Emma McChesney's desk said 9:29 a.m. when T.A. entered her office. He was immaculately garbed, miraculously shaven, and looked 10 years younger than the man with whom she had almost quarreled the evening before.
Good morning, T.A.
Good Lord. With that sheaf of correspondence and full pad of dictation, it looks as though you've been here all night.
Not quite. But I was here this morning in time to greet the night watchman. I wanted to get my mail out of the way. Have you seen the morning paper?
Just glanced at them. Why?
The Rasmussen Welsh Skirt Company has failed. Liabilities, $300,000. Assets, $100,000.
Failed? Good God. Failed? Why, girl, I thought that concern was as solid as Gibraltar. This is shocking news. Knocks the wind out of my sails.
Don't let it. Your sails should be full of a new breeze. This just confirms that the time is ripe for my plan.
Are you as sure of this scheme as you were yesterday?
I'm sure. Absolutely certain.
Then fire away.
All right. Here's the plan. We'll continue making Featherloom petticoats because there still are some women who are still in their right minds. But we'll make them as a sideline. The thing that has got to keep us afloat until full skirts come in again will be a comprehensive line of women's satin messaline knickerbockers made up to match any suit or gown, and a full line of pajamas for women and girls. Get the idea? Scant, smart, trim.
Look here, is this some kind of a joke?
And in our full and complete, not to say nifty, line of women's pajamas, pink pajamas, blue pajamas, violet pajamas.
If you are jesting, I think this is a mighty poor time to joke around. And if you are serious, I can only deduce that the worry and responsibility of this business has been too much for you. I'm sure that if you were...
That's all right. After you've thought it over, you'll be just as keen on it as I am.
Never.
Oh, yes, you will. It's the knickerbocker style that scares you. Nothing new or startling about pajamas, except that more and more women are wearing them. Why, a schoolgirl in a regulation nightie at one of their midnight parties would be ostracized.
Why, I've never heard anything so absurd.
Now, the knickerbockers have got to be ready by spring. We'll put them in all the larger cities through the Midwest, and along the coast, too. I'm planning to have the knickerbockers introduced at private and exclusive exhibitions and worn by, get this, worn by living models, not just mannequins. One big store in each town, see? Half a dozen good-looking girls.
Never. Never. This firm has always had a name for dignity, solidness, conservatism. I will not have young ladies flouncing about
and... Then it's time to lose that reputation. It's all very well to hang on to your dignity when you're on solid ground, but when you feel things slipping from under you, the thing to do is grab anything that'll keep you on your feet. I tell you, the women will go wild over this knickerbocker idea. They've been waiting for it.
It's a wildcat scheme. It's a drowning man's last straw, and just about as helpful. Look, Emma, I'm a reasonable man.
All unreasonable men say that.
I'm a reasonable man, I say, but this is going too far. If we're going to crash into the ground, we'll go decently, with our name untarnished. Pajamas are bad enough, but when it comes to the firm of T.A. Buck being represented by living model hussies stalking about in satin tights like chorus girls, why,
I expected this, and I prepared for it. I expected opposition. Just a moment, T.A. Miss Lanois, we're ready for you. Miss Lanois, this is Mr. T.A. Buck, president of the firm. Miss Lanois of the Gay Social Whirl Company.
Please, I'm Schumer.
Charmed.
Now turn slowly, please, Miss Lanois. Observe the absence of unnecessary fullness about the hips or at the knees. No wrinkles to show there. To the left, Miss Lanois. You'll see it fastened snug and trim with a tiny clasp just below the knees.
What do you think, Miss Lanois?
Women are wearing pleats this year, not only for the street, but for evening dresses.
Women will be attracted to a snappy little pair of yellow satin knickers under a gown of the new orange plush, or a taupe pair under a gray street suit. Why, I haven't worn a petticoat since I started...
Do you mean to tell me that you wear them too?
Crazy about them. Miss Lanois, will you just slip on your street skirt, please? Here, let me help you button up. You see, T.A.? Not a wrinkle. No bunchiness, no lumps, nothing but ease and comfort and trim good looks. T.A., you look absolutely bewildered.
Just a minute. Let me ask a couple of questions.
Questions? Ask 100 if you like. That proves you're interested.
Well, then, let me ask this young lady the first one. Miss Lanois, do you honestly and truly like this garment? Would you buy one if you saw it in a shop window?
Oh, I go without my lunch for the week to get it. Mrs. McChesney says I can have this pair. I can't wait till our prima donna at the theater sees them. She'll hate me till she gets a dozen like them.
Next question.
That's all. Only...
Run along now, Miss Lanois. You've done beautifully, and many thanks.
Hope you'll come and see our show some evening. You won't know me at first because I wear a blonde wig in the first scene. Third from the left, front row. Oh, I certainly hated to get up so early this morning, but after up it ain't so bad, and it certainly was easy money. Bye now, thanks.
Let's sit down and unravel our nerves a bit. Now, if you favor this new plan, I think it would be good policy to start the game in, say, Cleveland. The Kaufman Oster Company of Cleveland has a big, snappy modern store. We'll get them to send out announcement cards. Something neat and flattering. See? Then, thin girls, plump girls, short girls, tall girls, showing off the new line. They'll go through all the paces. It's a big advertisement for them, too. Don't you see? Don't you get it? Can't you feel how the thing's going to take off?
By gad, I'm darned if I don't believe you're right. Almost. But are you sure that you believe...
Sure? Why, I'm so sure that when I shut my eyes, I can see T.A. Sr. sitting over there in that chair, tapping the side of his nose with the edge of his tortoiseshell-rimmed glasses and nodding his head with his features all screwed up like a blessed old gargoyle, the way he always did when something tickled him. That's how sure I am.
All right, Emma. I'll leave it to you. I'll do my share of the work, but I'm not more than half convinced, remember?
That's enough for the present. Well, now, suppose we talk machinery and cutters and models for a while.
2 months later, T.A. Buck and his sales manager, both shirt-sleeved, were working frantically as they marked, ticketed, folded, and arranged the new spring lines of pajamas and knickerbockers. Enter Mrs. McChesney, who stands eyeing them worriedly. It is her dozenth visit to the stockroom that morning. A strange restlessness seems to trouble her. She wanders from office to showroom, from showroom to factory.
What's the trouble?
Oh, nothing. I've been thinking about how to make this take off, and I think I am the one to spread the word. I'm taking that line out on the road myself. I'm going to leave a trail of pajamas and knickerbockers from Duluth to Canton.
You? No, you won't.
I just don't get you, T.A. I'm afraid you don't realize what this trip means. It's going to be a fight. They'll have to be coaxed and bullied and cajoled and reasoned with. It's going to be a show-me trip.
And that's just why you can't do it. I won't have you fighting with buyers, taking their insults, kowtowing to them, salving them. It isn't women's work.
T.A., this is the 20th century. Don't argue, please. If it's no work for a woman, then I suppose it follows that I'm unwomanly. For 10 years, I traveled this country selling T.A. Buck's Featherloom petticoats. I'm tired of hearing you men say that this and that and the other isn't women's work. Any work is women's work that women can do well. Don't give me that sort of talk. Your father believed in me from the ground up. We understood each other, he and I. You've learned a lot in the last year and a half, T.A., but there's one thing you haven't mastered. When will you learn to believe in Emma McChesney?
She was out of the office before he had time to answer.
And you're listening to the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater here on KBIA. We'll be back with the second part of tonight's performance, Knee Deep in Knickers, coming up in just a moment here on KBIA. First, we wanted to take a couple of minutes and offer a preview of next week's program. You want to be sure and listen in next Friday evening at 6:30 for the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater as we present a hilarious performance of Stephen Leacock's Behind the Beyond. Here's a bit of a preview. It's something I think you'll enjoy a lot as we all enjoy the theater. It's sort of a behind-the-scenes look at what happens at the theater.
The first thing that has to happen in any theatrical show is the curtain rises. This is the signal for the audience to shut up and pay attention. It is the house manager's job to quiet the audience, and sometimes this can only be accomplished by force. Large, burly ushers can be very handy for this phase of the show. Once the audience is properly subdued, a man in a check tweed suit walks on the stage. Only one man. One single man. Because if he had been accompanied by a chorus, that would have been a musical. If four citizens in togas had been with him, that would have been Shakespeare. If two Russian soldiers had walked after him, that would have been melodrama. But this is none of these. This is a problem play. So he steps in all alone. All alone. You can see that he is a finished actor, finished about 15 years ago. He lays the hat, hollow side up, on the silk hat table on the stage right center. All this is done very, very quietly, very impressively. No one in the theater has ever seen a man lay a silk hat on a table before, and so there is a breathless hush. Then he takes off his gloves, one by one, not two or three at a time, and lays them in his hat. The expectancy is almost painful. The man on the stage picks up a pile of letters from the hat table, which doubles as a post office in this production. There are a great many letters, but he gets through them like lightning. Some of them he merely holds upside down for a fraction of a second. Then at last he speaks. It has become absolutely necessary, or he wouldn't do it.
And if you want to find out what happens next, be sure to listen in next week. That's Behind the Beyond by Stephen Leacock. Next week's performance here on the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater. Now let's get back to tonight's show, part two of Edna Ferber's Knee Deep in Knickers. It's the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater from KBIA.
You've learned a lot in the last year and a half, T.A., but there's one thing you haven't mastered. When will you learn to believe in Emma McChesney?
She was out of the office before he had time to answer. The next morning, Emma left for the Midwest, where the new line of knickerbockers and pajamas were very well received. She returned to New York in the late summer and found that subtle changes had taken place in the offices of T.A. Buck's Featherloom Company.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back, Emma. We've missed you. Come into my office and you can look at the orders that have been pouring in. You saved the company.
Thank you, T.A. And you have been personally handling the buyers who came to New York?
Yes, I felt it was the least I could do, with you out on the road sending all that business our way. Why, just last week I took Miss Sharp of Berg Brothers, Omaha, the one you warned against is the human cactus, out for dinner. Miss Sharp told me something about herself that explains her porcupinish nature. That poor child was engaged to a chap who was killed in the war, and she...
Kate Sharp? Why, T.A. Buck, in all her vinegary, narrow life, that girl has never had a beau, much less...
Why, Emma McChesney, you haven't developed claws, have you?
No. No, of course not, T.A. I just,
Early the next Monday morning, Mrs. McChesney, coming down the hall from the workroom, encountered Miss Ella Sweeney of Klein & Company, Des Moines, Iowa, stepping out of the elevator. Miss Sweeney seemed very skittish, rustling, preening, conscious of her dangling black earrings. Emma McChesney met this apparition with an outstretched, welcoming hand.
Ella Sweeney, I'm so glad to see you again. Wait till you see our new samples. You'll buy $1 million worth. Just let me show you our new knickerbockers. We call them the One Stepper's Delight.
Oh, yes. Mrs. McChesney Mr. Buck in, by any chance?
Mr. Buck? Oh, yes, he's in.
Is that his office?
You want to see Mr. Buck?
Oh, well, yes. You see, I bought from him a few months ago, and, when you buy from a person, why, naturally, you...
Yes, of course. I understand completely. Mr. Buck, Miss Sweeney of Des Moines is here, and I'm sure you want to see her.
Miss Sweeney, it's wonderful to see you again. You're looking...
The closed door stifled the rest. Emma McChesney stood with one hand over her eyes, so Napoleon might have stood after Waterloo. It was in this frame of mind that Miss Ethel Morrissey found her. She and Emma had been friends from the day that Ethel Morrissey had bought her first cautious bill of Featherlooms. Her love for Emma had much of the material in it. She felt a personal pride in Emma McChesney's work, her success, her clean reputation, her life of self-denial. She entered Emma's office now in her quiet blue suit and her neat hat.
Well, Emma McChesney, show me the new knickerbockers and pajamas that are all the rage. I want to buy and get it over so we can talk.
Are you sure that you want to buy from me?
What's that, a joke?
I'm not joking. I thought that perhaps you might prefer to see Mr. Buck this trip.
Now. Oh, what is it, dear? Tell Ethel. Oh, yes, I think I know, but tell me anyway. It'll do you good.
And Emma McChesney told her. When she had finished...
Emma, this is the best thing that could have happened to you. Oh, yes, it is. The strange thing about it is that it didn't happen sooner. Oh, it was bound to come. You know, Emma, the Lord lets a person climb just so high up the mountain of success before knocking them back down. He does it just as a gentle reminder to be humble.
I don't see why I should be reminded of my lowly state. Of course, that trip with the new line was, well, gratifying, but I earned it. For 10 years I lived with my head in a sample trunk, didn't I?
Emma, I'm a wise old party, and I can see that it isn't all peak with you. It's something else, something deeper. Let me tell you what happened when I came on a buying trip a few months ago. T.A. Buck very courteously invited me to dinner, and of course I accepted. When we entered the restaurant, every woman in it just sort of fell back at his approach, smitten. He didn't even have to raise an eyebrow to do it. Along comes this chap, elegant, well-dressed, polished, suave, smooth, low-voiced, well-bred, and eyes, the most beautiful eyes. When he spoke to a girl, it was the subtlest kind of flattery. Oh, Emma, I'm old and fat and 50, but when I had dinner with him at the Manitoba House that evening, I caught myself making eyes at him, knowing that every woman in the dining room would have given her front teeth to be where I was.
Oh, well, I suppose I cannot hope to combat such formidable rivals as elegance, polish, a well-bred voice, and eyes. My business tactics are futile compared to those.
Oh, you're wrong, Emma. His looks helped, but they didn't sell his line. He sold Featherlooms out of salesmanship, and because he sounded convincing and sincere and businesslike. It wasn't all flash and glitter, but the two make an invincible combination.
An hour later, after Ethel Morrissey had shrewdly selected her winter line of Featherlooms from the stock in the showrooms of the T.A. Buck Company, Emma said,
"You'll have dinner with me tonight, up at my apartment all cozy?"
"Not tonight, dearie. I'll be in bed by 8. I'm not as young as I used to be. Buying trips are such a chore. If you've got something real nice for dinner, though, and feel like company, why don't you ask, somebody else that's lonesome? Here he comes now. Bye-bye."
"Ah, Emma, won't you stay downtown and have dinner with me tonight?"
"Thanks so much, T.A. Not tonight."
"I'm sorry."
"Instead, I wish you'd come home to dinner with me. I don't know what Annie'll give us. Probably bread pudding. She does, when she's left to her own devices, but I wish you would."
"Does Annie always cook enough for two?"
Apparently, Annie did. Annie was something of a witch in her way. She whisked about, wrought certain changes, did things with asparagus and mayonnaise, lighted the rose-shaded table candles. No one noticed that dinner was 20 minutes late. Once, when the chops came, Buck said absently,
"Oh, I had those for lunch."
"It's nice of you not to say so. Look, T.A., I want to tell you that I know I've been acting the cat ever since I got home from the Midwest and found that you had taken charge. You see, you had spoiled me into thinking I was running the show. I just want you to know now that I'm glad and proud and happy because you have come into your own. It hurt me at first. That was the pride in me. I'm quite over that now. You're not only president of the D.A. Buck Company in name, you're its actual head. And that's as it should be. Long live the king.
I had to do it, Emma. It was time I stepped up.
Yes, I suppose it was. But don't you think that you overdid the wining and dining thing just the least little bit?
Well, you told me to entertain them, didn't you?
Yes, but I didn't tell you to consecrate your life to them.
Emma McChesney, you're not jealous because a lot of overdressed, giggling, skittish old girls have taken a fancy to me, are you?
No, of course. Well, maybe just the least little bit.
Emma, it isn't for your mind that I love you right now. At this moment, I don't love you for your eyes, Emma, or for your mouth, although you have the tenderest, most womanly, sweet mouth in the world, or for your hair, or the way your chin curves. It's not because of your throat line, or the way you walk and talk and sit, or the way that you look at me.
Then why do you love me at this moment?
Because I believe in you, Emma McChesney. I believe in you. Do you believe in me? Do you believe enough to marry me?
Yes, T.A. Yes, I will. But promise me one thing. Promise me that when you come home for dinner at night, you'll never say, "Good heavens, I had that for lunch."
And that is how Mrs. Emma McChesney became Mrs. Emma McChesney Buck. We hope you have enjoyed this presentation of Knee Deep in Knickers by Edna Ferber. Our players were Alana Berrigan-Scott as Emma, Michael Scott as T.A. Buck, Molly Dodge as Miss Lanoise, Allison Cassio as Ella Sweeney, and Molly Dodge as Ethel Morrissey. This is your narrator, Jason Cassio. This story was adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan and engineered by Darren Helwidge. We hope you enjoyed the show and will join us again next week for Maplewood Barn Radio Theater here on KBIA.
The Maplewood Barn Radio Theater is presented on KBIA by D&H Drug Store at Broadway and West Boulevard in Columbia and on Paris Road at the Haithman Village Shopping Center. Online at dhdrugstore.com. D&H Drug Store. Good health is just around the corner.